side of the tree and they don't. You know.
Morning, everyone. It is July 29th, 2005. We are convening the Subcommittee on Human Services and Public Safety for the House Special Committee on the Budget. And today our focus is going to be on House Bill 2792. And we have a work session. And we'd like to begin by inviting up Nancy Miller and whoever should have come with her to discuss this bill with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. Thank you very much for scheduling this bill. For the record, my name is Nancy Miller. I'm the Deputy State Court Administrator for Program Operations with the Judicial Department. And with me today is the Honorable Paul Lipscomb, Presiding Judge in Marion County, and Scott Crampton, also with the State Court Administrator's Office. And they are the experts on this bill, so I will turn it over to Judge Lipscomb.
Judge Lipscomb, you can disregard the phone message I have. Trying to get in touch with you this morning.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm actually
on vacation today, so I came directly here.
Well, thank you.
Good morning, members of the committee. It's a little over a year ago now that the Chief Justice appointed me as chair of the Statewide Court Security Committee, which really had a prior life but hadn't been active for quite a number of years. We've been working very hard, both at the subcommittee and committee level, as part of that process, and we drafted the original version of much as what is in this bill as House Bill 3020. House Bill 3020 merged with House Bill 2792, which was a separate bill on a similar topic that was put in by Representative Butler as a request of Judge Burdette Pratt over in Ontario. And the purpose of 2792 originally was simply to bring justice courts into the state court security planning process. The rest of the bill, and that's really what I want to address, the rest of the bill, what used to be 3020 but is now part of 2792, does a number of things. It expands the scope of statewide court security planning to include emergency preparedness and business continuity. We had dealt with on the local level, never on the statewide level, but on the local level, we had dealt with court security issues, intruders coming into the building, threats against judges, threats against court staff, and that sort of thing. And that planning process had been done on a local basis, dependent upon the availability of local funds within the individual court security fund for that locale. There had never been any funding provided for state court security for the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, the Tax Court, or the State Court Administrator's Office. And this was clearly the big hole in our state court security system in the area that most needed fixing. And that was the principal priority for our state court security committee as we geared up a legislative proposal to present to you folks. I was present for the swearing in of Ellen Rosenblum to the Court of Appeals earlier this week. And in attendance was not only every member of the Court of Appeals, quite a number of our local circuit court judges and circuit court judges from the surrounding area, but also the Chief Justice and all the members of the Oregon Supreme Court and the Governor and the Attorney General, and no security was provided at all. Someone intent on evil could have done an awful lot of damage in very short order. It's unusual that we would have that many important justice officials gathered in one locale in such a small room, really no larger than this one. But it's not unusual for the Supreme Court to gather all at once. They do that once a month, and they do that routinely without any security at all. The Court of Appeals gathers typically in smaller groups, but that's a dangerous situation as well, particularly when our state is in the throes of dealing with some of the same issues that you folks have dealt with, Measure 37, some of the marriage and family issues that have been somewhat controversial lately. When those issues come to court, they're often presented in a much more personal fashion excuse me, than they are here. Measure 37 proceeds through this building in general. It proceeds through the courts in particular, normally as to how it affects a particular piece of land, which vitally concerns not only the owner but often the neighbors. And feelings and emotions run very high. I think it is of critical importance that a significant level of security be provided for the appellate courts as they gather, and also for the state court administrative offices as well. Because there has been really no security provided, we really need to begin with an assessment of what those security needs ought to be prioritized, what choices ought to be made in terms of balancing security and openness. Those are not just security issues, they're also political issues, and the Supreme Court justices and the Court of Appeals judges are going to have to weigh in on that as well. So I can't come to you with a menu of what the exact needs are, but we can come to you with a need for planning, and a need to begin the process of ratcheting down the security to a level that affords a good bit more safety for the people who are involved in at the highest levels of our justice system. That's pretty much the message I wanted to give you. We have at the local courts quite a variety of different levels of security, and it really depends on the perceived needs of the individual locales. Marion County has a rather higher degree of security than many other locales, but we have perhaps more activity as well. Even with our front door security, which includes x-ray machines and metal detectors, we still have people each year, each month, passing or attempting to bring in knives and even guns on occasion. The scariest situation that I recall is a gentleman, it was about 2 years ago now, went to attend a domestic relations proceeding involving custody, and as he went through the metal detector, it went off, and it went off because he had a butcher knife sewn inside the lining of his coat. That wasn't there for any legitimate purpose, I'm confident. It's not somebody who forgot to take a pocket knife out of their pocket.
Now that instance is on a local court level, and this, what you're referring to, is appellate level.
Right.
We will get to how this will also benefit the local court level.
It will benefit the local court level, but it will do so sort of indirectly. We don't have currently any coordinated training for court security. The training is handled at the local level also. So some locales will send people to other states or to a conference where court security is being discussed, often by the federal U.S. Marshals, but many do not. And because we haven't had any funds for it, we haven't had any ability really to conduct any significant court security training on a statewide basis for the state courts. Now for the state courts and the county justice courts, and I think it would be very, very beneficial if we could do that and all get on the same page and be dealing with the same information. We also ought to be dealing with more than just security issues, though. We ought to be dealing with the dangers presented by natural disasters as well as man-made disasters, and I think that's why it's important to broaden this at this point to include emergency preparedness and business continuity. So when the courthouse burns down, or the earthquake comes, or the volcano comes, or the tsunami comes, and the courthouse is no longer in operation, where do we go next so that the rule of law can continue in our jurisdiction? Where do we begin to operate, and how do we go about reestablishing something that looks like normal court operations? And we can plan for that in advance, and we ought to be planning for that in advance. Were there other questions?
President Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you talk to us a little bit about how this budget was developed?
This bill went first through, and I don't know if I'm answering your question directly, Representative Hanna. If not, I'll do a course correction. This bill proceeded first through the House Judiciary Committee, and the funding proposal to get a funding source identified was simply to tap back into the same process, the same vehicle that was used for local state court security funding, which is the an additional assessment on the county assessment, not the unitary assessment that's often confused, but the county assessment under ORS. I'm drawing a blank on it. I think it's 137.
309.
And so that was the funding source that we identified, and we did it with a small surcharge on $3 when the assessment is $15, $4 when the assessment is $18, $5 when the assessment is $25, and so on, up to a total of $7 when the assessment is $66. So the assessment, the additional assessment, would run from $3 to $7. These assessments are placed on violations, which are typically, but not exclusively, traffic offenses.
Let me follow up on this, and I'll maybe get a little more to the point. I see the information. We're talking about a 12 to 25% increase in the assessment level, but the information we have also describes that the level expenditure during the next two biennium are unknown.
I'm going to defer to somebody who's got more expertise in that area than I do.
Just a second, would answer your question if you knew that what we're going to be funding today is essentially a one FTE, but that the courts will have to come back to the e-board to ask, or with a plan, before there's actual money that, as it's accumulating, before any allocations will be made, they have to show us what their plan is.
I understand that. I actually talked to Mr. Borden just a little before we started. My question really just revolves around, we're going to put away $1.8 million. We're going to spend $140,000. In the following biennium, we're going to put away $2.12 million, and we're going to spend $175,000. So at some point, we're probably going to have $3.5 or $3.7 million sitting in a fund, but we don't have a plan for how we're spending the money, and we're going to ask people to pay it. 12 to 25% increase in assessment. I'd like to understand how we came up with that dollar figure.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, again, Nancy Miller, Deputy State Court Administrator. I think it's very fair to say that we did the best we could to estimate the need, kind of a thumbnail estimate, and it is true that we need to actually engage in the planning process. We hope to do that relatively quickly, come back to you with a plan that tells you this is exactly what we're going to be spending the money on to do the security for the Supreme Court and for the appellate court buildings. Quite frankly, I think is going to be a little bit expensive, and so we were trying not to underestimate the need or overestimate, and you are correct, it's our best guess at this point in time, but we'll be back as quickly as we can with a specific plan.
Okay. What did you base your best guess on? Why not half that amount? Why not twice that amount?
I'm Scott Crampton from the State Court Administrator's Office. Estimate of what we thought we might need long term was based more on developing a long-term plan and starting a process in place. In addition to the multiple facilities for the facilities that you've heard about, this bill also covers statewide training for the entire judicial department and all of the facilities that are out there on a local basis, as Judge Lipscomb indicated. We don't have an assessment. We don't have a specific budget, as you've heard. We base the assessment increases on what we think long-term we're going to need to secure the entire state. And frankly, we did look at the assessment and just came up with a $3 to $5 increase, knowing that down the road we have an ambitious undertaking. It was a budget projection, and I think that when we do get our plan, our assessments done and our plans, the scope of this undertaking will fall in line with what it's going to take to do a good job to secure the judicial department.
Could I just say a word on that? I couldn't sit here and credibly tell you whether that estimate is too high or too low. I don't have a solid feeling for that. But we need to begin, and I think that the process identified here of allowing us to begin the process and coming to the e-board and asking that the discrete decisions made be funded on a step-by-step basis is responsible, I don't really know how else we would accomplish this. We could wait another 2 years, and we could use that one position and come up with an elaborate plan and then approach you folks 2 years from now for funding that plan. I would think it would be unfortunate to delay the security and the for the appellate courts and the expanded training for the local courts and the planning, the emergency preparedness planning, and the business continuity planning for another 2 years. Okay. We're already behind the curve on this.
All right. Representative Wisniak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Judge. Ms. Miller and Mr. Borton, I guess. We got this early this morning, and I don't think anyone sitting up here is opposed to increasing the security for the courts. I think my concern is that, you know, you've obviously gutted and stuffed a bill here to put this in, and I'm not sure it really fits as far as I'm concerned about a time limit. When we got this morning, we thought you were asking to build better security or hire more people. When I read real fast, look over, scan the bill, we're only talking here about a plan. This is a plan about how we increase security. So I really feel like we need a time limit or a sunset or you know, that this, you know, this doesn't, the way the bill is now, this is going to continue to collect and continue to be accumulated, and there's no way that says, hey, stop, we have enough for a plan, we need to implement now, because you have no authority in this bill to implement or do a hire people or do security or build extra security.
Actually, I think there that exists, Representative Wisner, if I could draw your attention to it. On page 5 of the bill, lines 7, 8, 9, and 10 and 11 provide that expenditures by the state court administrator from the state court facility security account shall be made only for developing or implementing a plan for state court security improvement, emergency preparedness, and business continuity under Section 3 of this 2005 Act, and B, statewide training on state court security.
So it's a plan and training.
And could I just address one other thing that Representative Wisniak raised, and I don't want anybody to be under any misapprehension about this. This bill went through, in its present form, through the House Judiciary Committee in May. It got stuck in the House Budget Committee on the 25th of May, and it's languished there until today. It was simply, apparently, an oversight, as I understand it from talking to Representative Scott, the way the computer put 2792 in numerical order, it ended up at the top of the page. And so literally when the file was opened like this, it was buried by the prior page and nobody saw it. And so I was standing on the outside knocking on the door trying to get somebody to pay attention to 2792 for literally 2 months before I was able to get Representative Scott's attention. He was eager to help us once he found the problem.
Okay, that's not the issue. Okay, we appreciate that, but we're here, and Representative Wisnant wants to know why, and Representative Hanna are both interested in why we're accumulating money, which is going to be millions of dollars, on that's going to be paid by individuals, and there's it, according to what we're reading, it the only plan we have presently with this money is that you have authority to establish a plan and to establish training. Is there more that can be done in terms of this bill?
Yes, Representative Richardson, and again, calling your attention to page 5 on line 9, it's developing or implementing. So I think that it gives us the authority, and our plan is to come back here and tell you exactly how we will implement it.
All right.
So we won't just be saying plan and train.
Okay, did you have another question?
Yes, sir, let's follow up to that. I think that's a good point, but where does it say, Mr. Chair? Ms. Miller, where does it say then? Okay, it doesn't say, it gives you the authority to implement. It doesn't say implement with approval of the legislation oversight or something like that.
There's going to have to be a policy bill that comes along.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Wisdom, we're happy to work with you whatever way it takes to figure this out, and I'm just going to give you my very simple understanding of this. My very simple understanding of this is that if this bill is passed, we will go back, we will do a plan. We will come back to you. We are asking for the staff personnel to help us do that. We will come back to you. We will say, here's the plan to do security for the Supreme Court. It's going to cost X number of dollars. Here's what we're going to buy. Here's the plan to do the training. It's going to cost X number of dollars. Here's who we're going to train. Here's what the curriculum looks like. Please release the money, and this is exactly what we're going to do. So when we come back to the e-board, all of those specifics would be filled in, and then we will do them.
Okay, Representative Hannah.
Thank you. Ms. Miller, so you're going to do as you described with the $139,671 and that person doing that, or you're going to do as you described with the $1.6 million that's in the 0507 biennium?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, we're going to do as I described with the one person that we asked for, then we're going to come back and ask you for the rest of the money to do the rest of the stuff.
Okay, I have a follow-up question on that. There's no sunset in this, and yet we assume that after you get a plan developed and after the plan is implemented, there will come a time when it is done, and yet this money is going to continue to accumulate. What is the plan for the excess funds that may be X biennial for now?
Mr. Chair, because this is brand new, I anticipate we're going to have ongoing needs for security and disaster preparedness. We don't know that. If you feel more comfortable with a sunset on this, for us to come back next session and say, all right, here's what we did, because we will definitely know more then. So if we come back and say, here's what we did, and here's why it's going to be ongoing, I feel very comfortable with that.
There's an alternative, and that is that if we approve the surcharge is in place, and if the plan is to protect the appellate court, and yet your example, you give no examples of, and nor am I aware of any, of actual attempts on, you know, to blow up or to damage the appellate level, although there's many examples of people trying to come in at a local court level. And we are including in this bill the original language, which relates to justice courts, and there are also circuit courts. What would be the resistance to saying after the implementation of the plan to provide for the security at an appellate level, excess funds could be used for providing for security and at the local court and justice court level?
I don't think there'd be anything wrong with that at all, Representative Richardson. And that might be something that we looked at together with a sunset clause. There might be a different way to divide up the funding that was provided in subsequent years to better meet the overall reprioritized at that time needs of the state court system for security and emergency preparedness. Right now, the critical need is for the appellate courts because they have nothing, and the local courts at least have something. But if we do a good job of addressing the needs of the appellate courts during this next biennium, then yes, you're absolutely right. The highest need and the biggest priority might be at the local level once again, which is where we began.
Certainly, and if you have the FTE and he's doing the research, the knowledge and experience that's gained at the appellate level could be utilized to help the local courts as well.
Absolutely.
Did you have other questions, Representative Wisnant?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still, we're not opposed, we're trying to do this, but I just don't see the close to this, and I don't see, Mr. Chair, I, you know, once you build a secure building, you don't build it every year, and you got this money coming in. I mean, it still seems like we're creating a bunch of money here that we could, you know, we want to be able to use it effectively, and I don't think you want to keep building buildings or hiring security people. I just don't see how we close the loop at the end. Once you have the plan, and I don't know how to, I don't have wording or proposal how to sunset or whatever the term is, but we're not against this. We just see that all this money piling up, and I think the legislature should have some say-so in how that's spent.
Well, Representative Wisnant, let me remind you that after this is implemented, they can't spend any money other than the one FTE without coming and getting legislative approval, either from the e-board or from the subsequent legislature. They don't have access to the money other than the initial money for the single FTE. So, I mean,
but you just proposed, Mr. Chair, you just proposed that the excess money go to the counties or whatever.
Well, after they implement their plan, but they can't just, I'm just saying they don't have the ability to go and spend this money any way that they want, but the money is going to accumulate. And I think that all three of us and the questions that we've asked so far are in the same vein, and that is that we want to make sure there aren't unintended consequences, one of which would be that this money first be implemented and then it just accumulates, and yet the only way it can be spent is on planning and developing for the appellate level.
And we're done.
And it never gets done. Yeah. But if you do get done, then what? And now we have to come back to the legislature and say, well, what are we going to do with this extra money? And we would rather make sure that there was a provision in here to deal with it right now. And the judge has indicated that it would be a reasonable thing to say after the planning and implementing for the appellate level, excess revenues could go to the same issues, but at the circuit court and justice court level. If that's the case, now we've got a place for additional funds in future biennium to go. Does that... That makes sense.
Chair Richardson, Representative, I would like to point out that the model that you've described is exactly how this bill is structured from a budget point of view. The local circuit courts now have a local court security committees. They obtain their revenue through this same county assessment. The only thing that this bill has done is to make a $3 to $6 increase in that assessment and redirect it toward a state court security fund. So the infrastructure is in place for doing exactly what you're talking about at the local level within the same funding structure. It would just be a question of redirecting those funds from the state court security account back down to the present local court security accounts that have been in existence for about 10 years now.
Okay, that makes sense, you know, because we're talking, you know, between 20 and 29% increase for 9 buildings, right? Essentially.
We're not just talking about the appellate and administration here. What we're also talking about is the statewide training for state court security, which the committee and that Judge Lipscomb chairs has representatives from many of the circuit courts in the state. And one of the biggest holes that exists now under the present local court security funding is the absence of money to do coordinated training statewide. That is a huge glaring problem that would be addressed by this bill and could continue under the funding structure that you've recommended.
All right, if we could move on, there are certain individuals that are concerned that what we're discussing would have an effect would be affected by the relating clause. And I can't figure out why that would even come up. Can anybody tell me why that would come up if it says relating to court security?
Mr. Chair, I couldn't figure that out either.
Okay, thank you. That's fine. Virginia Hannah?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does the Department of Safety Standards and Training, do the officers who go through that training program end up as uniformed, badge-carrying officers who provide court security?
It varies from local jurisdiction to local jurisdiction, Representative Hannah, if I understand your question. Currently, we have private security. It's usually a combination. Some local court jurisdictions use strictly sheriff's officers. Some have outside privatized contract security officials, as we do in Marion County. There's an issue, frankly, and I don't think it's resolved as to, under current statutory language, whether those private security officials need to be certified through the BPST. I think the BPST is adamant that they do, but that hasn't been the practice. If I could marry your question with Representative Richardson's earlier question, part of the training that we need to do, the coordinated statewide training, is to involve the local sheriffs and the private providers, as well as the state judicial department folks and the district attorneys and the private bar association, so that everybody is on the same page with court security, emergency preparedness, and business continuity, how we're going to handle these problems when they come.
Okay. I'd just like to add on to the excellent line of questions that Representative Wisnett was following, in that when the plan comes back, it should include when we're done, because the task can always fill the time, the plans can always fill a future stream of money, and if we're dealing with the appellate level, which is a finite entity, we'd like to make sure that the plan would say, okay, here's what we plan on doing, here's what it would take to implement that. Once the implementation is in place, here's what it'll take to maintain it, and then here's our projection of additional future revenues, and here's where we propose that those go, and they would be directed to security issues at the circuit and justice court level after the appellate security is provided.
Representative Richardson, if I might, the current bill provides that each plan shall be reviewed and revised or amended as needed, not later than June 30th of each odd-numbered year. So each biennium, the plan has to be reviewed, revised as needed.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your suggestion is exactly in line with what we'd like to do, and we like nothing better than being done.
Okay,
thank
great.
You.
Did you have a question?
Well, and I was just going to point out that there's also a provision, I think it was page 5 again, that the court administrator shall provide the Chief Justice at least quarterly a financial report. So there's a little oversight there, too.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your comments. We're on the right track now and addressing my concerns. I'm not going to belabor this point either, but you're talking about the disaster emergency preparedness and business continuity, and that's good, too. I would hope you're coordinating that, or that's with the Office of Emergency Management or Homeland mm-hmm. Security Defense, and that should all be together, and it doesn't really address that you're coordinating with Homeland Security or Office of Emergency Management with that, and that's just a point.
We've made that attempt, and they didn't really want to dance with us because they had other priorities, but as we bring something to the table in terms of some statewide training that they can participate in, I think that relationship will become a two-way street. We've been knocking on their door, too.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Follow up to that.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Judge. I'm sorry to hear that, because they should be. You should have a big tent and start eliminating. Get everyone aboard and see what needs to then eliminate.
In fairness to them, and I didn't mean to be too critical, I think they're trying to take care of the first responder needs first, And we really are what they call critical infrastructure. And I think for them, that's a second priority, a priority, but a second priority.
Thank you.
Representative Hanson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I'd like to apologize for being detained before I got here. This is critically important. This is critically important because the security touches so many things. We've had the personal tragedies that have been involved with incidents that have affected several counties, as well as the potential problems from any kind of a natural disaster because of our aging infrastructure. I mean, we've got some very old courthouses that are very vulnerable to problems happening, as well as the more national security issues that are occurring now. So I think this is certainly needed, and sounds like it's very comprehensive in terms of how it's going to deal with all of those areas.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
Chair, want a motion?
We would be prepared to have a motion on the amendment. I was just finishing an addition to that. Is we're going to have a conceptual amendment since we don't have the actual amendment here. We can
present.
We can discuss this. You have some just any thoughts?
Well, there's a lot of unanswered questions in this, in my mind, honestly. I'm not against court security. You know, to just say we're going to jump fees 12% to 25% to put money aside for something we might do and not have a plan, it's kind of like saying I'd like to build a house, and if you give me enough budget, I'll build whatever I like. I mean, when you say how did you build this budget, and it's not like, well, there was a model out there for court security, and we said to get to this model, it takes this much money. It's not like Department of Safety Standards and Training said, here's the training necessary and appropriate for those folks providing the security at these courts. It's going to cost this much money to do it. There's no real... There's just nothing to follow here. We're just creating a pool of money and asking somebody to pay the bill for a substantial percentage increase to their fee, fine, or levy, and it just makes me nervous.
That's point well taken. I might just add my own feeling on that. I understand that. I think that the judge was referring to that when he said that, you know, they could wait and just have the FTE do the plan and then come back and say they need $3 million or $4 million, and then the legislature would have to come up with that money, or they can implement the fee increase now and then let that money start accumulating so that when they come back with their plan, there is already funds generated in any account that can be utilized toward the implementation of the plan. There's also no guarantee, and I got a sense that that this is the case, that these funds would be the only amount utilized to implement the plan that's arranged. In other words, the plan may come back and say, guess what, it's $8 million initially, but we do have 1.5, and we'll soon have, you know, $2.5 million
more
toward that, and the rest would have to come from other sources, because they're not saying we know what the amount is going to be because they don't have that plan in place yet. And so this is a work in process. You know, any other thoughts on that? I mean, and if you feel uncomfortable with it, I got a sense here that there's enough on the panel that feel that this would be appropriate to go forward, and so I think everyone needs to vote their conscience on it. I also am always concerned about raising fees, and I would like to ask one question. Is there a precedent for essentially telling a circuit court judge that regardless of what his fine is, it's going to be larger than what he assesses? In other words, are we not interfering with the requirement of a judge to be able to assess the fine that he feels is appropriate?
The assessments can be waived or reduced by the judge imposing the fine. It's not like the unitary assessment.
Okay. Got it. So he would add this if he chose to, but he doesn't have to, and therefore it becomes part of his assessment of a fine.
I think it works similarly, but a little different from that. And if I'm wrong, Scott can correct me.
You're the judge.
Right. I think it's automatic unless the judge says otherwise.
Okay. You know, as a judge, do you have any angst about having the state tell you that the amount that you feel is inappropriate to assess as a fine to a wrongdoer is going to go up because of a state desire to raise revenue?
Absolutely not. You folks do that all the time.
That's well, we do it, but we do it.
You tell us that all the time. We have sentencing guidelines. We've got ballot measure 11. It doesn't involve just fines and sanctions. It involves prison time and jail time. And you folks shrink our the pattern has been, and I don't want to engage in this debate now, but the pattern has been since I've been a judge that our discretion has shrunk every time the legislature met.
And, Mr. Chair, that is always an issue for us. The way this bill is written, though, that discretion is maintained because the judge always has the bottom line decision to say this is waived because of this reason. So that's what we look for in the bills, is to make sure that while you're setting a policy, there is some discretion on the case level by the judge, and that exists in this bill.
That answers my question.
Can I follow up to that? Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That being the case, and given that this assessment, though not the additional amount, but the assessment method is used now, what percentage of cases have judges waived that assessment? They've had that ability to do that. What percentage of the time do you do it?
Do you know, Scott?
Representative Hanna, I do not know. We have no way of knowing that.
It would be very small. And most of the larger jurisdictions now have violation bureaus, and so often the court develops a schedule for the fine amounts that include the assessments, and the offender deals with a clerk rather than with a judge when dealing with low-level traffic matters.
Can I follow up on that thought?
Certainly, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So while it is at the judge's discretion, I mean, my feeling is, just from your comments, and this is just conjecture, hearing each of you comment, is that while that is one of the items that's discretionary to a judge, it might rarely be used.
I would say that that is accurate. I would not expect that it would be used except rarely.
The wording in the actual bill on page 6, lines 1 to 3, say the court is not required to impose the assessment or a part of the assessment if he finds that the defendant is indigent or that imposition of the assessment would constitute an undue hardship. Actually, if that is the only word, he doesn't have full discretion. He only has discretion if he were to find that it would be an undue hardship or that the defendant is indigent. But I guess he has the authority to say, even though others might not see it this way, I do. Do you have a question, Paul?
Mr. Chair, just a moment.
Would you identify yourself?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. And I think there's an issue that Judge Lipscomb alluded to that I'd like to just also add to it. The statewide training on court security, as I understand it, would include deputy sheriffs to the extent that they provide court security, and would also include the private security people who do that in those circumstances.
Okay.
And that would be statewide training as well.
And the DAs.
And the DAs.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Well, not a question, but just a statement in terms of the critical nature of the problem. I was county commissioner when Multnomah County implemented their first court security program. The amount of weapons that have been picked up that people were very casually bringing into our court was just incredible. Seeing the range of them, I mean, it would make a museum display. The other thing is that especially in the domestic relations part of the court, the restraining orders, the divorces, these types of things. People are under incredible emotional stress that can trigger some pretty ugly incidents, and being able to react to those, prevent them, and learn how to deal with them is just real important. If one of the concerns has always been that we're just sitting on a time bomb waiting for very serious incidents to occur, and I have no doubt that we wouldn't want to develop a plan, go through the time that takes, and then not have the resources to fund the plan after it's been developed. So I think the sequencing of this, of starting to collect the dollars now so they'll be available to implement a plan, is a very thoughtful move.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Snyder, are the counties in support of this building bill? Because there is some additional work, and you've talked about the 5% and over that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, yes, we are.
Thank you. Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I have another question. Again, we just got this bill. Section 7, page 6, about did you add the Chief Justice? This is about firearms in a courtroom. You added the Chief Justice of Supreme Court, but you didn't expand that any further.
What page, I'm sorry?
Six, page 6, line 44.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
May I address that?
Certainly.
Chair Richardson, Representative Wisnett. If I understand the question, the additional language or the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court simply adds to existing law. Existing law allows a presiding judge of a judicial district to establish procedures regulating the possession of weapon in a court facility by a peace officer or a federal officer subject to the following. This simply adds the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court as another presiding judge who may establish procedures regulating the possession of a weapon in the court facility by a peace officer or federal officer.
I'm sorry, it's just my lack of knowledge about the situation. Is that all inclusive now, so any judge, or is it? And why did, if it's not all judges, then why did we not have all judges having that authority?
The presiding judge, under current law, the presiding judge of each judicial district, for example, I'm the presiding judge in Marion County. I may establish a plan under which peace officers or any federal officer may carry a weapon within a court facility. And it's done currently in our court through our local court security plan.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, by adding the Chief Justice here, what you've done, I think, is say you've covered all the judges in the circuit courts by saying the presiding judge can do it. By adding the Chief Justice can do this for the appellate courts as well. So right now, a presiding judge wouldn't do that for the appellate courts, and our main issue that we're trying to deal with in this bill is the appellate courts. So now you've given the chief the authority to establish those same kinds of rules for the appellate courts.
One quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Perfect, wasn't it?
So, but again, it's lack of my knowledge. I'm sorry, but how about Justice of the Peace Court? Are they covered too now? Can they set the rules, or is that my basic question now? Has everyone got that authority now in a courtroom, or are we leaving someone out? Is my question.
Justice of the Peace Courts are subject to.
I think that's a county function, and the county ordinances would control. I'm not an expert on this area, but justice courts are not state courts. And
Mr. Myers just left, and he was here.
I just didn't know. Do we need to? Is it all inclusive, or do we need to be sure?
Get some
here.
LC is going to be taking a close look at this, and so why don't we have a look at that as well.
Thank you.
But we won't take assumed to amend it at the time.
That doesn't include court facilities.
Is there further discussion? If not, we have a conceptual amendment that, Governor Busnett, if you could make that with that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Make sure that this is acceptable to you because the second paragraph deals with our discussion here.
We'll listen carefully.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee and people in attendance.
You have a motion.
I have a motion. Motion to amend HB 2792A, page 7, after line 32, insert the following. Notwithstanding any other law limiting expenditures, the amount of $139,671 is established for the biennium beginning July the 1st, 2005, as the maximum limit for payment of expenses for fees, monies, and other revenues, including miscellaneous receipts, but excluding lottery funds and federal funds, collected or received by the Oregon Judicial Department's court, state court facility security account. Then this is the addition.
And this is going to be, this is conceptual.
After relevant plans and their implementation have been accomplished at the appellate level, excess revenues in this account are to be directed for similar security purposes, emergency preparedness, and business continuity at the circuit court and municipal and justice court level.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnant, can you just clarify, does the first section of that amendment say that we spend no more than the 135 no matter what for 0507?
I'll read the motion.
Sorry.
Representative Wisnant has moved that we amend House Bill 2792 with the following amendment, and these are the first part of this is specific and the second is conceptual. The first part of the amendment is this is all a conceptual amendment. And it states, notwithstanding any other law limiting expenditures, the amount of $139,671 is established for the biennium beginning July 1, 2005, as the maximum limit for payment of expenses from fees, monies, and other revenues, including miscellaneous receipts, but excluding lottery funds and federal funds collected or received by the Oregon Judicial Department's State Court Facilities Security Account.
So, Mr. Chair, is that saying that's the maximum you can spend for 0507? Sorry to be a little dense.
I'll tell you what, let me answer that after I finish the whole part of this, and then we'll go to discussion and we'll deal with that. The second part says, after relevant plans and their implementation have been accomplished at the appellate level, excess revenues in this account are to be directed for similar security, emergency preparedness, and business continuity purposes at the circuit court, municipal, and justice court levels. Is there discussion? Representative Hansen.
So is the assumption that the limit of $139,000, after beyond that, as the plan to, then excess revenue beyond that can be spent for these other purposes that you just listed?
Well, actually not. The amendment itself to the bill relates to the fact that the bill says we're going to have an immediate allocation for planning, and then that's the one FTE, that's $109,000. Then there's going to be that plan brought to the emergency board for approval and authorization to expend any more money from the account that is accumulating. And so when that plan comes and there's allocations of funds for it and it's implemented, there's still going to be money that's going to be accumulating with this additional fine on an ongoing basis. And so excess funds after there's a full implementation of the plan that's ultimately approved and implemented, then and only then would the excess funds be used for security, emergency preparedness, and business continuity purposes at the local level.
Mr. Chair, what we're thinking is that there needs to be language added in that section that talks about the $139,000 that it should say $139,000 and such other amounts as approved by the E-Board. Because if we only say the $139,000, and it seems to be limited to that, for 0507, then you haven't at least made the money available to implement the appellate court plan. So the piece that seems to be missing is that. Robin?
For clarification.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I apologize for interrupting. This is an expenditure limitation on other funds. The emergency board has the authority to increase the expenditure limitation on other funds when the department comes forward. There is absolutely no need for the language you are suggesting. This is standard boilerplate expenditure limitation language.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank
Sorry.
You for the clarification.
He just scared me, that's all.
Is there a further discussion on the conceptual amendment that has been proposed?
I know. He's adding the
recording. All right. That sounds reasonable. Representative Wisnett, would you take a friendly amendment that your motion be two separate motions? The first one is the first half that you prepared, that you presented, and then the second motion would be, or we would end with that. Would you accept that?
Yes.
All right. The motion now before the committee is that the following would be amended. A conceptual amendment to House Bill 2792. Notwithstanding any other law limiting expenditures, the amount of $139,671 is established for the biennium beginning July 1, 2005 as the maximum limit for payment of expenses from fees, monies, or other revenues, including miscellaneous receipts, but excluding lottery funds and federal funds collected or received by the Oregon Judicial Department's State Court Facilities Security Account. Is there discussion on that proposed amendment? Is there objection to that proposed amendment? Hearing none, amendment is carries. The second friendly amendment to Representative Wisnett's amendment is that the following be amended conceptual language to House Bill 2792. It would read as follows. After relevant plans and their implementation have been accomplished at the appellate level, excess revenues in this account are to be directed for similar security, emergency preparedness, and business continuity purposes at the circuit court, municipal, and justice court levels. Is there discussion on that second proposed amendment? Is there objection?
Mr. Chair, could I just ask for clarification?
Certainly.
We're adding for the first time municipal courts to the court security plan by that language, and if that's what you intend to do, I don't have a particular problem with that, but this bill addresses simply state courts and justice courts and not municipal courts. Municipal courts would
right.
be city courts.
City courts.
Right. It really is a conceptual change from what we've been doing so far.
These are conceptual amendments. I'm trying to think if there's a good reason why, if there's excess funds and you have, nowhere does it say that this money has to be equally divided among any of this, if there's any reason why that couldn't be placed in there because they also have security problems with people coming in with butcher knives and other things. It would merely give the authority, if there was excess funds, that it could be used in that direction, but it's not saying that it would have to be. But I'm glad you brought it up because you're right. It is. Discussion on
well,
that.
And I would have aspect. To say that it's possible that they would come forward at a later time and ask why they'd been left out, and we'd be faced with adding them into it.
Is there any, can you ever think of any reason on this subcommittee why we would want to exclude then, since this is not a directive that any number, any amount, or any portion would have to go, just as it would include them in this
is
potential.
There changes we have to make to that.
Mr. Bourne, do you have Representative Hannah?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only question I would have, are they in the loop in terms of how they would even apply to receive the funds?
know at this point that we're a few biennia away if things go well, and it would be a decision that would have to be as far as implementation.
And I guess I amend my just last comment with that. I just would think this might be important to the rural areas. Sometimes that's all they got there.
Well,
and little, okay. Very little, if any, security other than the one cop in town or whatever.
If there's no objection, then do you want to express any thoughts on this, Mr. Gordon? Okay. If there's no objection, then we'll leave it in. All right. We have we've done it. And these are conceptual. That means that they're subject to clarification once LC takes a look at this and say, what are they doing at this subcommittee level?
In the end, it does.
But I believe that we've made it clear what the intent is, and we've also dealt with a potential consequence of excess funding in the future that really should stay within the same area but be used where it can do good at a local level, rather than have it be available to this legislature to merely say it's just there and it can be utilized anywhere. Right. So with that, we are ready to take a final motion for the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Thursday, wasn't it?
I move that this subcommittee approve the establishment of 1U executive analyst position for 0.75 FTE in the Oregon Judiciary Department. Do them separate, don't you? Do them all together.
We'll go ahead and take that individually. Representative, wasn't it moves the establishment of 1 new executive analyst position, which is a 0.75 FTE in the Oregon Judicial Department. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none. So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative, wasn't it?
I move that the subcommittee move HB 2792 as a conception amended to include other funds limitations of $139,671 for the 2005-2007 biennium.
Representative, wasn't it moves House Bill 2792A be conceptually amended to include other funds limitations of $139,671 for the 2005-2007 biennium. Is there discussion? Objection? Hearing none? So moved. So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Ripley, wasn't it?
I move that this subcommittee move HB 2792 as conception amended to the House Special Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, we've already moved those into the bill. So there are the amendments we've already discussed are already into this bill. So now we've just added additional amendments. So the motion is that House Bill 2792A, as conceptually amended through four motions that we previously approved, be moved to the House Special Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation. Is there objection or discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. So House Bill 2792A, as amended, now goes forward. With that, we close this work session on this bill. And without further input, we will adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. And